This is the State of Things. I'm Frank Stacio. Russian composer Peter Tchaikovsky is considered one of the most popular composers in history. His works include ballets like Swan Lake and Nutcracker. But his personal life was clouded by a secret. He was gay. Tchaikovsky never publicly came out in fear of persecution, but his sexual identity influenced his life's work and might have led to his mysterious and sudden death. A performance this weekend by the Durham Symphony Orchestra will feature work from Tchaikovsky's final years. And it takes place Saturday at the Carolina Theater in Durham. Joining me now is William Henry Curry. He is music director and conductor for the Durham Symphony Orchestra. And back on our program, Maestro Curry, welcome. So good to have you again.
It's a pleasure to be back. Thank you so much.
We're going to talk about Tchaikovsky and his sexual identity. But first, tell us more. I mean, what does everybody know about Tchaikovsky? And tell us about his roots in Russia.
Well, the two most popular classical composers are Mozart and Tchaikovsky. That tells you something right there about his genius, that he's right up there with Mozart.
Yeah, right.
He was born in 1840 in Russia, when Russia was still kind of a backwoods nation as far as culture.
Right.
When he was born, there still were no music schools, no major orchestras. And like most young people that are interested in music, the talent was quite obvious by the time he was 12. But nonetheless, he knew he couldn't make a living as a musician, so he was a law clerk for a while. And then the pull of music became too strong to resist. And some people that were professional musicians said, as we all need as kids, you have it. You have it. Go to it.
So there he is. Tchaikovsky is coming of age as music is coming of age, at least as serious and symphonic music, in Russia. He's nurtured. He's getting good. And by the time he's 30 years old, he's also starting to realize about his, come to terms with his sexual identity.
Right. And like many people in their 20s, like myself, I assumed I was going through a phase. And of course I would be married by the time I was 30. But by the time he was 30, he realized that that wasn't going to change. And there were rumors circulating around the music school where he was teaching about his involvement with certain male pupils. And he was getting a reputation.
Mm-hmm.
Some of his gay friends were now married to women. They said, look, you have to get married. And it's very easy. She stays on her side of the house and you stay on your side of the house. She will cook and clean for you like your mom. It'll be great. So he's writing an opera, Eugene Onegin, about a young lady that writes a letter to a man that barely knows her. And she tells this man that she's desperately in love with him. And then Tchaikovsky says, well, you know, I hope to find a woman like that, too. And then he gets a letter from a former pupil that says, I'll commit suicide if you don't come to see me. So he says to his friend, I bet this is the woman I'll marry. So he sees her like three times and then proposes marriage. He says to a friend, well, she's pretty but unpleasant.
Yeah. And not just a little bit psychotic, after all, threatening to commit suicide if he doesn't show up, right? So I mean, there's that.
She died in a mental institution at the end of her life.
Yeah.
So Tchaikovsky did not tell his gay brother. He told his father because he wanted his father to be proud of him, and the father came to the wedding. There was a picture taken right after the wedding of Antonina and Tchaikovsky. They're seated together on a couch. And depending on your mood, it's either tragic or hysterically funny. But she looks very, very happy and satisfied. He looks like the deer in the headlights. And the marriage was a total catastrophe. I mean, unlike his other gay friends, he just couldn't make it work. He tried to consummate the marriage and was successful, but he said never again. And then a month later, he fled.
So there's the story, and fascinating, you said this opera that he had written, and of course he'd already done that. This wasn't inspired by this story, but in fact it coincided. So why don't we play just a little bit from the opera Eugene Onegin, and this is a young woman who is singing while she's writing that letter to the main character.
Thank you.
There's a clip from the opera Eugene Onegin, composed in the 19th century by 19th century composer Peter Tchaikovsky. My guest, William Henry Curry, the maestro, is conducting the Durham Symphony Orchestra this Saturday in commemoration concert of Tchaikovsky, that concert at the Carolina Theater in Durham. So tell us more about this. We have here, first of all, how is that opera received, and where does that fit in sort of his body of work?
Great question. Very few people know that he wrote about 10 operas. This was an early work, the third. And he didn't even want to call it an opera because it's so intimate and domestic and small scale. It wasn't meant to challenge the great French grand opera tradition like his later operas. And this is a good thing because he identified with all the characters and he wasn't trying to impress anyone. And it was written from the heart and it was a tremendous success and it still is in the standard repertoire.
Let's pick up Tchaikovsky's story from here. He flees a marriage that will not work. But again, he's not only escaping this marriage, but he has to one way or another escape these rumors. So what happens to his life at this point?
Well, he can't go back to the conservatory anymore to teach because now everyone knows. How could this be a one-month-long marriage? Oh. And then a miracle happens. A millionaire patroness, Madame von Meck, appears out of nowhere and agrees to take care of him for the rest of his life. Unlike many composers, he doesn't have to conduct, he doesn't have to teach, he can just compose. The idea between the two is that they should never meet in person. But between them, they're passed hundreds of intimate letters.
And what's he writing about? Is he able to share the personal details of his life?
Somewhat. He, unlike anyone else, he shares with her what's he's thinking about when he's writing his famous pieces. So often you see descriptions of the Fourth Symphony, and they don't ever say, who is he talking to? He's talking to his patroness. But he doesn't discuss ever his sexuality or his private life. He describes his wife. He never got a divorce because to go to trial, it would have come out. Why do you two want to split up? So it's a very discreet relationship. They never meet. And she gives him his space, and it's successful until the very end, where she, for some reason, abandons him.
He's famous for pieces we all know one way or another, and even if we don't know the title, we've heard them in movies, we've heard them in commercials, and certainly at Christmas time we know The Nutcracker over and over again, Swan Lake, of course. Why don't we play a clip from that? If you don't know it as Swan Lake, you'll know this for sure. There's a clip from Tchaikovsky's Swan Lake, and we're talking about that because the Durham Symphony Orchestra will do a commemorative concert this Saturday at the Carolina Theater, and the maestro is here, William Henry Curry, who will be conducting. He didn't like that. He didn't like Swan Lake so much.
Tchaikovsky was riddled with self-doubt about his works.
Yeah.
He thought Swan Lake was a disaster, Nutcracker wasn't good, 1812 Overture he was embarrassed about. It's very sad that the things we love the most, and they are great, great masterpieces, he was wrong about.
What was he? What, did he think that they didn't meet his own standard, or did he think they were not good enough by other standards? What was it that he thought was not? Because, you know, there are musicians and composers who think, oh, that's trivial. You know, I'm glad you like it, but I never took it seriously.
The disastrous marriage affected him and affected the music he wrote. It's almost like he didn't trust his emotions anymore, and his music becomes more detached, more rococo, more classical. And the things that we especially love about Tchaikovsky are the pieces he wrote after the marriage had been defunct for about 8 years. And then he went back in touch with his emotions again, and we have these incredible masterpieces, the Manfred Symphony, the Pathetique, etc.
And Romeo and Juliet also, he scored.
The issue of forbidden love triggered his inspiration. And, of course, the great story of forbidden love is Romeo and Juliet.
Let's hear a little piece of Romeo and Juliet by Tchaikovsky. So any of us who have seen a romantic movie in the 40s or played video games in the 2000s have heard the love theme from Romeo and Juliet, but we didn't know the Tchaikovsky. Not all of us knew that Tchaikovsky wrote it. Again, the theme here, forbidden love, his sexual identity becomes a compelling, obviously very important to him in a country where he had to repress his identity. Talk about Pathétique.
He wrote a symphony in E flat that was to be his symphony number 6. He completely destroyed it. He said, "This symphony is not from the heart. It will do my reputation no good at all." And then there's a mystery, as I explained to the Durham Symphony at their last rehearsal. All of a sudden, he was twice as great as a composer while he was writing this piece. The only example I can think of where all of a sudden the genius is troubled is Gershwin with Porgy and Bess. Because you can see Gershwin, American in Paris, as being a very fine piece of music, and Rhapsody in Blue. But Porgy and Bess is something deep and outstanding, the great American opera. The Pathétique, he knew when he was writing it. This was his magnum opus, the apex, his greatest and most sincere work. And I think that there is a hidden program. There is a hidden story, which he admitted to certain people. But he said, "I will never divulge it." Now, there are clues in the music, to be sure, but they're just clues.
What are they? What's the secret?
Well, in the first movement, first of all, the symphony begins in a very, very bleak mood. You know, symphony is like a journey. You don't start off on a journey on your belly, crawling. You have to start with some energy, some optimism, some courage. The beginning of the symphony has none of that. It's absolutely dead. And then we hear a beautiful love theme, perhaps a farewell to life, who knows? And then he quotes from the Russian Orthodox funeral service, just a few bars in the trombones. Now, maybe the average Russian didn't even know these few bars. But that's obviously, he's giving us a clue. This symphony is about death. And then we get to the last movement where it's called Adagio Lamentoso, a lament. And no person until this time had ever concluded a symphony with tragic music. You know, we always want a happy end. Think of Scorsese's Taxi Driver, where he tacks on the ridiculous, you know,
right.
epilogue.
Right.
And I was glad when he tacked it on because I couldn't get out of my seat, you know? So, but Tchaikovsky ends this piece in a completely negative way, and that was followed by other composers, but this was the very first time.
We're going to hear that at the end of this segment, and we'll go out on that music, but I want you to tell us about the end of Tchaikovsky's life, which ends shortly after this music debuts.
Well, it's obviously funeral music at the end. No one has ever disputed that. How he managed to conduct the world premiere of this, I mean, I'm always frightened. It's always made every conductor anxious. One of the great conductors of all time who conducted Wagner's Ring Cycle during the second movement put down his baton and let the orchestra play because he couldn't conduct it.
Wow.
And then I just found this out yesterday in a book that right before the dress rehearsal, he went to the greatest Russian conductor and said, "Please, I can't go through with this. Please conduct the world premiere and the dress rehearsal." And the man refused because the piece is way too complicated to learn in a few hours. And then I read something else today, reviewing my materials. People said that Tchaikovsky conducted very badly the premiere. Mm. He was obviously nervous. He was conducting everything too fast, as if to avoid cheap sentimentality. And the audience response was, you know, they admired the great genius, the world-class celebrity, and they gave him an ovation when he came on the stage, but not so much an ovation when the symphony ended. A week later, he was dead at the age of 53. And then people saw, was there a presentiment? Did he realize he was going to die? How could it be that he wrote a musical requiem, conducted the world premiere, and was dead within a week?
And we don't know. For sure. And therein lies a mystery.
I have read and read everything. In fact, I talked to the world's greatest expert on Tchaikovsky and this issue. Alexander Poznanski wrote a book called Tchaikovsky's Last Days. And there are two theories. One is he contracted cholera, which he was deathly afraid of contracting because his mother died that way, and that was the first great traumatic experience in his life. The other was he was told to commit suicide via arsenic poisoning to avoid a sex scandal. And everything I read has holes in it. You can believe that theory, or you can believe the cholera theory, but there are holes in every theory.
William Henry Curry, maestro, will be conducting the Durham Symphony Orchestra this Saturday for a commemorative performance of the mysterious Tchaikovsky and his work at the Carolina Theater in Durham. It's called The Last Days and Masterpieces of Tchaikovsky. Bill, thank you so much for sharing this story with us.
Frank, it's always my pleasure to be here. Thank you.
You can find out more about Maestro Curry and the show at our website, stateofthings.org. North Carolina Public Radio is a broadcast service of the University of North Carolina, Chapel Hill. I'm Frank Stasio.